Okay, so continuing in Hilchos Mechsa, so today we're going to transition into food, food that's right for animals, and maybe we'll talk a little bit about raw foods, raw meat, you know, like basic questions that come up all the time. A person comes home, they open their refrigerator, and they realize that it's broken, that the freezer is broken, let's say. So they have all this raw meat in the freezer, so what do you do about that? Are you allowed to move the raw meat out of the freezer? What makes something Mechsa when it's raw? Or let's say you, like in my house, I have my coffee matzav set up next to the milchik sink, and right above that is a cabinet that has the sugar in it, but it has all sorts of baking needs in it. It has flour in it also. So if someone stuck the sugar behind the flour, am I allowed to move the flour out of the way in order to be able to reach the sugar? Because raw flour has no use on Shabbos. Can't do anything with raw flour on Shabbos. So all of these kinds of questions that come up. So let's start with the Mishnah Masechta Shabbos. The Mishnah Masechta Shabbos on Kuf Mem Gimel Amud Aleph tells us the Ma'avirin Milfnei Hashulchan Perurin Pachos Mikzayis V'Seir Shalfonim V'Seir Hadashim Neishu Meichel Behema. That if you have crumbs that are Pachos Mikzayis and other types of foods that are suitable for animals, like little tiny pieces, food remnants of other types of food that animals like to eat, that's not mukta. You're allowed to move it off of the Shulchan. Shulchan Aruch and Sivchav Zayin Paskins the Mishnah. Paskins exactly what the Mishnah says, with the explanation of the Gemara that bones that are suitable for dogs and shells that can be fed to animals and other crumbs that are less than the size of a kazayis aren't mukza, because if it's edible for animals, it's not mukza. However, if the shells are not suitable for animals to eat, then they are mukza because they serve no purpose whatsoever, and therefore you're not allowed to carry them. So if you have something that's not roy for an animal to eat, so how do you get it off of your table? It's sitting there, you're eating pistachios, right? So you open up the shells and you leave them all, they're now all over your table. You need to get them off your table because you want to have a clean table, or you want to eat a meal there, or whatever, and these are mukza maklas kufa. So what are you going to do? How do you get it off the table? So Shulchan Aruch offers three suggestions. Mishnah Berurah adds a fourth. So Shulchan Aruch says, number one, that if the shells are on a tablecloth or on a plate, then you could just tilt the plate or the tablecloth, causing them to fall. In the second suggestion, if the shells are on a plate that has bread on it, then you could carry the whole plate with the bread and the shells, because it's a basas of davar asur ula davar mutter, because the bread is davar mutter, and therefore you're allowed to move the whole basas. And third, the Shulchan Aruch says, if you need the place where the table is, you could move the entire table, even if there are only muksa items on the table. Or to, by the same token, if you need the tabletop, you need to use the top of the table, so you can pick up the whole tablecloth, because you need to use the it's tiltul minatzad litzorich dover hamuter. So even though it's not just leaning it or tilting it, you're lifting it, but you're allowed to lift it because tiltul minatzad litzorich dover hamuter is mutter. Then the Mishnah Berurah adds the following. He has a fourth way to sweep the crumbs off the table. You need the table to be clean. You're allowed to use a knife to remove the crumbs. So that's a fourth suggestion. Take the challah knife and push all the crumbs or all the shells that way. And the reason that that's mutter is that it's considered tiltul minatzad litzorech davar hamutter. It's litzorech davar hamutter because you want to use the table, and it's tiltul minatzad because you're not dealing directly with the crumbs. You're pushing it with the knife. Comes along the Alter Rebbe in Shulchan Aruch Harav, and he says that he disagrees with the Mishnah Berurah. He says, "V'meina klipos ruuyos lebehema kigon klipi agoz u'mushkei d'mechayotzi v'anshein asurus betiltul keitzim v'avanim." If you have pistachio shells that have no function whatsoever, no animal is going to eat them. Asur lavir mel shulchan bein biyadav bein bedavar acher. He's very clear. The Shulchan Aruch Rav says, even if you're using davar acher to remove them, it's aser. And he gives a specific example of using a knife to scrape the crumbs off the table. He says that's aser. Why is it aser? Isn't it tiltul minatzad l'tzorech davar hamutter? Shouldn't that automatically mean it's mutter? No, he says a little bit mashen ki k'shem garon b'sakin einam tazlin. Me'alein Elohu mitaltalan al yedei asakin shena salo kiyad aruka. He says the sakin just becomes an extension of your hand, and that's like you're being mitaltal with your hand itself. So it's However, if the accumulation of the shells or whatever other inedible food that's there on the table begins to become repulsive to you, begins to become something that's unseemly to have around on Shabbos, so then it would be a graf shel rei, which we'll discuss later on what the halachic status of a graf shel rei is all about. So when we say the krum zasan kazayis of muktza in a place where there are no animals, that's only true after the meal is over. But it's a number of the achronim point out that during the meal, even very tiny crumbs are not muktza. In the Dirshu, they quote this from Rav Nissim Karelitz. If you look in Orchos Rabbeinu, Chelek Aleph, page Resh Samach Gimel, makes the same point. Meaning, very often you'll be sitting at a table. You know, you're at one of those long Shabbos meals, and you finish lunch, you finish dessert, and like, you know, so you have some crumbs left on your plate. So it's like, you know, you're just picking up the little crumbs and eating them. Because people do that. So since people eat little tiny crumbs during the meal, so during the meal it would not be considered muktzah. It would only become muktzah after the meal. Chutshani has an interesting distinction between breadcrumbs and cake crumbs. He says, breadcrumbs, lasan gazayis, are mukta. Cake crumbs, people always eat, even if it's lasan gazayis. You know, that little bit of sweetness that is always appealing to a person. You have a little, few crumbs of a chocolate cake, people will put that in their mouth. Adrab, there's no guilt when you take just a few crumbs of a chocolate cake. They feel guilt when they're taking a whole piece of chocolate cake. But for challah, it's a waste, you know. You're gonna, or unless it's a crumb challah, and you're taking the crumbs of that people. That was even the same. Yeah. So it's not a din in bread, it's a din in what?
Old-fashioned.
Yeah. He's talking about like challah that was, you know, that was actually bread. You know, that was like no safek hamotzi. You know, like so yeah.
Why isn't crumbs after the meal considered roi lachilas behema?
Why isn't crumbs after the meal? No, it could be if there's behemas around, or if there's. We'll get to that. What kind of access you need for behemas? Yeah. So Mishabrura in Sivkat and Kufi Yadalit points out that bones are only muktzah in a place without animals if there's no meat attached to them. But if there's some meat on the bones, then even if there are no animals around, the bones become buttled to the meat, and therefore the whole thing is not muktzah. So Rav Nissim Karelitz explains in the Chutshani in Chelek Gimel, Perek Samech, he says, V'chein matzinu, d'shiyari basr she'enu muktzim, avke she'heim mu'atim pachos mikazayis, that little remnants of meat are not muktzah, even if it's a very, very tiny amount. You got a niggin or something? No? So even a very tiny amount of bones, of meat rather, pachos mikazayis, umishom kein shiari basar shalat samus mutil tatala etzem agava basar. And that's why when you have shiari basar on the atzamos, you're allowed to be metal to the atzamos agav the basar afsha basar pachos mikazayis. And he says, and therefore, marrow would have the same status, meaning if you have a bone that has marrow that's edible inside of the bone, so that would also qualify as meat, if it's edible marrow inside that you could access, and therefore it would not be muktzah. Okay. Then the Shulchan, yeah?
When we spoke about boar earlier this year, you mentioned the chicken bone. This is saying that if you have even sliced out of meat on the bone, not borer, separate the bone from the rest of the meat.
No, you'll have to figure out how to do it in a way that's not borer. Okay, but there are always ways to do it that are not borer, right? But over here we're dealing with dine muktzah, that since you can access the meat.
There's different shiurim for how much of the deer in dine borer based off how much meat's on the.
Different shiurim?
Meaning for borer you would need more chicken on the bone.
In order for
not to be borer? And muktzah, as long as there's slice and now it's not muktzah. Didn't we say earlier this year by Bora that is, if there's even the slight amount of chicken, it's still going to be muktzah because no one eats that? It's still going to be this sort of Bora because.
A way of determining what's Och and what's Psalm. That's what
we're doing. Remind me
that
what?
That Tosfos says that so Och is the one that's the a lot, and Psalm is the one that's a little. So,
right.
So I think not exactly sure, but.
No, but we have from the Tal that you could take Ochel and Psolas from Ochel instead of Psolas from Ochel.
The soup, the fly in the soup.
So if you take a chicken bone from chicken and there's a little bit of meat on the chicken bone, so that's Ochel and Psolas.
Yeah.
So there's a little bit of Ochel on the bone.
So that's mutter.
So you're saying as long as you have even the smallest. So you said, I don't remember this, but apparently you said last time that if there's a tiny amount of meat on the bone, that no one would eat, that's not called ochel, that's just called your taking psula.
Oh, really? Is that what you're referring to?
Probably, yeah, probably said that.
I don't remember.
Because by muksa would the same thing be true, there's a tiny bit of meat that no one eats in the chicken bone.
I don't know, pachos make zayas. I would assume that it has to be something that a person would eat, right? Otherwise, what's the point? I mean, the whole point is that it's batel, that the bone is batel to the meat. But if it's something that if it's meat that no one would ever eat, then why is the bone batel to it? Yeah, I would assume it would have to be something that it just could be way less than a kazayis, that a person would still take that last little bite off of the bone. Shulchan Aruch in Sif Chav Ches then goes based on another Mishnah in Shabbos and Daf Kuf Chav Vav, that if you have big bundles of hay or soft types of wood that are usually used for firewood, that they're not muktzah if you designate them as food for animals. And then Sif Chav Tes, Shulchan Aruch says that the caveat to that din that appears back in Chav Zayin. That again, the Shulchan Aruch in Chav Zayin says that remnants of food or shells are not muktzah if animals would eat them. So that applies only if those animals are available in your neighborhood. They're around in your neighborhood. But if you live in a neighborhood that doesn't have any animals, you live in a complex, no pets allowed or whatever, and there are no animals anywhere near you. Or the food or the shells are only suitable for a certain type of animal that you don't have. Like you live in New York, and the food is commonly eaten by elephants. But where are you going to find an elephant? So in New York, you don't live in the jungles of Africa. So then that would be considered a muksa, unless you happen to own an elephant. Meaning, even if it's an animal, it's one or the other. It has to be an animal that's either commonly around in the neighborhood, or an animal that's not commonly around, but you're one of those guys that has like these illegal pets in your basement or whatever. That so you have the crocodile in your bathtub in your basement, but most people don't have crocodiles. So the Ramah says that that's why bones without meat are not muksa, because they can be given to dogs, and dogs are always around. Every neighborhood has stray dogs that are running around, and the Mishmur says that the Ramah is telling us that even though you don't own dogs, the bones aren't muksa because somebody owns dogs. And in every city, there are always dogs around. So that's why the bones are never going to be muktzah. Now, Rav Yashiv points out that the Shulchan Aruch seems to be a stira, because in Shin Chav Dalid Yod Aleph, the Shulchan Aruch paskins that there are only two instances where you're allowed to feed animals on Shabbos. Number one, if you own the animal, and the animal can't find food on its own, meaning it's mezonos of alecha, the animal relies on you for food because you are its owner. And number two, the other instance is dogs. That all dogs, whether you own it or not, you're allowed to feed on Shabbos. Because so the reason for the Isra of feeding animals on Shabbos is because Chazal want us to rest on Shabbos. They don't want us to, be playing zookeeper on Shabbos, to be spending our whole Shabbos like Noah on the Teva, going and feeding all of the animals. And it takes a lot of effort sometimes to feed animals. But again, if the animal relies on you for food, you're allowed to feed the animal on Shabbos. So if you have your chilazons in your fish tank, so they don't eat otherwise. You can go 6 months without feeding them, and they'll still be alive sometimes. One out of three, but they rely on you for food. So then you're allowed to feed them on Shabbos. But if you own the animal, so then you're required to feed it. The Gemara in Brachos Daf Mem tells us that you have to feed your animal before you eat yourself. So obviously it's something that you're required to do. Chazal allow feeding stray dogs because dogs are always hungry. Right? The Mishmur says that mizonos of muatin. So Rabbi Yashav asks, wait a second. If the halach is you're not allowed to feed animals that don't belong to you, how can we say your food remnants are not muksa because of animals that don't belong to you? I'm not allowed to feed those animals that don't belong to me. Meaning, I have these shells that lizards would eat, let's say. I don't have a lizard. Yes, there may be a lot of pet lizards in my neighborhood, but I don't have a pet lizard, and therefore it's usher for me to feed a lizard, or a cat will eat it. I don't own cats, but there are seven old ladies around the corner that own cats, right? So the fact that a cat will eat it, I'm not allowed to feed those cats. So how can you say the food remnants are a muksa because you can feed them to chayv va'of ha-metsuyim? You're not allowed to feed those animals if you don't own them. So in the Sefer Shvus Yitzchak, he quotes Rav Eliyashiv and he writes, V'shamati me'agon Rav Yosef Shalom Eliyashiv Shlita, D'davka im yesh bailim le'balei chayim. Shim lo kein, kibin shasulitin la'mochel, sh'arein m'zunosim alecha, k'mvor b'simen shin chavdal sefiral, v'chein osu l'taltum ma'achalam. If nobody owns them, for sure it's asr to be metal for them, because no one's allowed to feed them. V'nei m'shubur shom sifkan l'marav, kasum shem magravam, t'kelev mutal achilu afilu ein lo bailim, t'mitzvah k'sas, litein lo mezonos. It's a mitzvah to give him mezonos. L'fizeh, klipin v'atzomel shiru'in l'klavin, im yesh klavin b'makom ha'hu, af b'shein lem b'ayilim, if there are stray dogs, mutal taltalam. Only dogs would eat this. No one owns a dog, but there are a lot of stray dogs in the neighborhood. It's not mukta, because it's mutal l'achilu klavin. V'yesh la'ayin, ma mahani shematsuyim bosomokim b'ali chayim sh'yesh lem b'ayilim, harei bir alach ha'shem dibra maschul liyoni kasa b'shem el yirab demi she'ein b'ayilim ala b'ali chayim osu la'achilam. But didn't we learn that if you're not the b'ayilim, you're not allowed to feed them? V'im kein zesh ha'atzomus v'aklipin etzlo v'ein lo b'ali chayim osu la'achil b'ayim eschaveru v'im kein lo mutzal taltalam. Right, that's the kasha. How could it be that it's mutter for me to be metaltal, these shells that are on my table, because somebody else owns a lizard or a cat or whatever that's going to eat these things, that I'm not allowed to feed those animals? But Tzarech Lomar, he says, the kivin sheyachol litnam lebaaleihem v'hem yachilum lav mukta, meaning you can always gift them to the b'ayilim of those animals, and they could feed them, and therefore it's not going to be mukta. Right, if there are dogs or other animals with owners in the city, it's not muksa, because you could feed them to a stray dog or you give them to the owner of the animals, and then it's not going to be muksa. But if you live in a city that has no stray dogs, or where nobody owns any pets, or you're in a secluded hotel for Shabbos without any animals, right? It used to be you weren't allowed to bring animals into hotels. Now they make it much more pet friendly or whatever. The Shulchan Aruch HaRav Paskins in Shinches Samachay that food remnants would be muksa, and you're only allowed to move them in one of the three ways mentioned in the Shulchan Aruch. Now in Piskei Tshuvas he points out that today all food remnants are muksa because pet owners only feed their pets very specific animal food, and they don't just take whatever's on their table and feed it to their pet. That is yesh v'yesh, I think. I don't know if that's really true. I mean, it probably depends how sensitive the pet is, right? There are probably certain pets that if you feed, someone once couldn't find any kosher Pesach fish food, so he fed his fish matzah for a week, and then he had to buy new fish afterwards because they all died, because apparently fish don't digest matzah very well, plus it's gebratz. Someone told me that a guy who I'm friendly with is a big Talmud of Rabbi Abadi. Not Rabbi Simon, a different guy. He's a big Talmud of Rabbi Abadi. And he told me that he was talking to Rabbi Abadi about the halacha that you're not supposed to marry a bas ha-ma'aretz. And who that applies to nowadays. And Rabbi Abadi said, there's no such thing as a din ha-ma'aretz b'zman hazeh. Girls go to school, there's no such thing as a bas ha-ma'aretz b'zman hazeh. So then he was asking him another shayla that he was telling him. He was at someone's house on Pesach, and a little bit of water spilled on the tablecloth, or a matzo crumb hit the tablecloth, I forgot, one or the other, hit the tablecloth, and they immediately fumigated the whole place and wrapped up the tablecloth and threw it, whatever, and so Rabbi Abadi said, oh, that's an Amaretz, that's a Bas Amaretz, right? you get his sense of what he has a distaste for. But anyway, the Piskei Tshuva says if the animals all have very, very particular diet. So then, this is just the klal and muktzah, is that it depends on the reality. And if no one would ever use this to feed animals, so then it's taka muktzah.
What's considered a neighborhood? If I were saying that a hotel that doesn't have pets, there's no animals around.
Yeah, in some secluded hotel somewhere in Pennsylvania where.
Yeah, in a city.
Outside of the tchum, something like that, yeah. Yeah. you know, a lot of times, if there are animals that would eat the garbage, which almost every neighborhood has animals that, you know, would get into your garbage if you don't if you don't cover up your garbage, that would also count. You know, that's what Piskei Shavuos points out, that feeding an animal that doesn't belong to you is asur because of tircha. But if there's nowhere added tircha, you're just throwing out the garbage, and the animal helps himself, then it's mutter, you know, and l'chora would turn the food into non-muksa, which is interesting. Meaning, I'm not allowed, meaning it's a different answer to Rav Eliyashiv's question. Yeah, I'm not allowed to feed other animals, but it doesn't mean the other animals aren't going to get the food, because if I just don't close the lid on my garbage can, there will be some sort of creature going through the garbage. In Israel, you can't go to, you know, you can't see a garbage bin that doesn't have a cat jumping out of it. You know, so if the animals are going to have access to it, then that would be enough to make an animal. So. You're not allowed to give him a ton. It means you make it that the person can.
So you're asking machna the crumbs to your neighbor's dog?
No, not machna. I'm not allowed to feed your animals. You're allowed to feed your animals my stuff if I don't care. You don't even have to make kinyan. You're allowed to feed my crumbs if I don't care, right? If you see that I'm fine with it, you're allowed to use. You're allowed to. I mean, they're two separate inyanim. There's the kinyan element, so you don't ever have to be. You have to be coded. I'm taking someone else's crumbs and feeding it to my animals. Now, we mentioned that the Gemara in Brachos Daf Mem, it's interesting, it appears in Gittin Samach Beis also, that you have to feed your animals before you eat yourself. There's a question why that's true, meaning the fact that you have to do that means that your pet is going to be a mitzvah to feed on Shabbos, and because it's a mitzvah, it's mutter. Meaning, because it's a nosav alecha, and any animal that's mizonos of alecha is a mitzvah to eat. So Chazal were not gozer that it's tircha yaseiri, even though it might be tircha to feed a chilazon, because you have to make sure you put the food right near it, because they're not the fastest creatures, and then the other fish are going to try to get it. So it may be a little bit of a tircha to feed your pet chilazons, but afal pikein, they were never gozer on such a tircha, because it's something that is a ktsas mitzvah. So why is it a mitzvah? So there are midrashim that say that we only get food in the zechus of the animals who Hashem provides for. That somehow Hashem gave food in the world in the zechus of the animals, according to several midrashim. But most assume it relates to tzar bali chayim. It's got nothing to do with that. It's about tzar bali chayim, which l'chora, if it were about tzar bali chayim, that would apply even to animals that aren't yours. Meaning, if it's an animal that sees you eating and is therefore salivating. If the halacha that you're not allowed to eat before you feed animals is not necessarily about who owns the animals, but it's about tzar bali chayim, l'chora that would apply even if the animal's not yours, but you have access to it, so you're staying in someone's house where their dog is there. They're not there, let's say, but their dog is there. So even if they never ask you to feed the dog or whatever, they assume the dog is eating other stuff. But if you see the dog is salivating and hasn't been fed, and you're allowed to l'chora, according to that approach, you'd be allowed to feed it also, because that would be enough of a devar mitzvah. Paliyoi says that the animals depend on us, and we depend on Kadosh Baruch Hu, so it's symbolic of how we want Hashem to provide for us. And that's why the Gemara in Tainis says that when there was famine, they would tie an animal up away from its mother to indicate that if Hashem doesn't have any rachmanas on us, we won't have rachmanas on the animals. Meaning, like, there's this understanding in the Bria like that, which would mean that that's only when it's mizonos of alecha, when it really relies on you for food. Rav Shechter in Mipnine Rav explains that Hashem has to support animals because mandiyav chayiyav mizoni. Right, there's a principle that it's only fair. If Hashem is going to give life, He has to give the capability to sustain that life. So if Hashem is going to give life, He can't not give food to sustain that life. So it's midas hadin to feed animals. Hashem doesn't have to support us because we've sinned. So midas hadin would dictate that we don't get any food because we did an egel and we did a meraglim and avodah zara countless times throughout the years and all the other averos that we've done throughout the years. So midas hadin would dictate that we'd get nothing. We'd be entitled to nothing. Animals don't sin, so animals deserve food. Mandi yav chai, yav mizon. mazoni. Hashem has to give animals food. We don't deserve it. So since animals are entitled to food midina, and we're only entitled to food with midas hachesed, they come first. And that's why Rivka gave Eliezer before the animals. She was indicating that she assumed he was a tzaddik. That was the kunz. She was saying, oh, you must be a tzaddik who deserves food midina. And that's why I'm going to give you before the animals. But otherwise, you'd have to give the animals first, because that's midina versus not midina and is only a chesed. So it would turn out that, you know, which reason you assume for the mitzvah to, or the requirement to feed your animals before you yourself, might play a role in terms of which animals it applies to. Is it only your animals, or is it any animals that happen to see you, that happen to be around when you're eating? Which would in turn happen afkamina in Hilchos Shabbos. But I didn't see anyone make any such distinction in Hilchos Shabbos.
Where did he say that it was a Gemara Gittin?
Yeah, it's Gittin Samach Beis. Yeah. There are limitations, we'll leave feeding animals. There's a lot more to say about feeding animals just in general, whether you should be feeding animals human food, meaning is it appropriate to feed animals food that, you know, oh, but my dog loves potato kugel. Yeah, but the potato kugel is made for the people, it wasn't made for the dog. So is there a problem with giving human food to animals? So there's a Gemara in Tainus Tav Chav. The Gemara says that every Arab Shabbos, Rav Huna would send a shliach to the shuk to buy whatever remaining vegetables were in the shuk, so that the mochrim will know that they'll always sell out, and that way they'll continue to make sure that the shuk is well supplied with vegetables to cover Shabbos, because mochrim don't want to be stuck on Arab Shabbos with a lot of extra schora, because that means they can't sell it. There are people in Gourmet Glad on Arab Shabbos, they are like 3 o'clock. The prices of the meat go way down. Like they start charging like half price on all meat. So my wife once called my niece at like 12 o'clock and she was in Gourmet Glad. And she said, oh, you know, Gourmet Glad can pick something up for me. And then my wife called my niece, same niece, for something else later at like 2:45. And she's like, where are you? She's like, I'm in Gourmet Glad. Like, but you were in Gourmet Glad 2 hours, 45 minutes ago. She's like, yeah, I'm sticking around. I have a shopping cart full of meat. I'm waiting for 3 o'clock to go to the register. So they don't like that, right? Meaning they started policing that. They don't like that people do that. That because they don't want to be stuck with the extra meat. They want to sell everything out. So Rav Huna wanted to ensure that they would know that they could sell things out. So he was a rich guy. He would send a shliach to go buy out whatever they had on Erev Shabbos. And that way, they would make sure that the mochrim would always continue to supply the market properly for Shabbos. And then he would take whatever extra produce he had, and he threw it in the river. So the Gemara says, throw it in the river? Why would you do that with perfectly good food? So the Gemara, what should he do with it? So the Gemara says, give it to Aniyim. So he said, no, he was afraid if he gives it to Aniyim, then Aniyim are going to come to rely on it. And he doesn't know the next Shabbos he's going to have the ability to give it to Aniyim. He doesn't know that he's going to have the food next Shabbos. So he didn't want Aniyim to come to rely on it, like a Tomchei Shabbos package that they're going to get every single week. So he didn't want to do that. So the Gemara says, okay, so why don't you give it to the animals? So the Gemara says, Kasavar Machal Adam Ein Machil Lebehim. He assumed that he holds that you're not allowed to give Michael Adam to a behema. So why? Why is that? That you're not allowed to give Michael Adam to a behema? Our whole discussion, notice in Shulchan Aruch, is about shells and peels and crumbs, things that are no longer eaten by people. The assumption seems to be that a Michael Adam you're not going to give to a behema. So Rashi on the spot says, because Mishum Bizo Yochlin, the Mechsi Kaboit Betova, Sheshbiya Kurush Baruch Biolam, Hashem gave us all this plenty, he gave us all this wonderful food. And we're saying, yeah, give it to the dogs, give it to the animals. Rashi also writes, Inami Mishum Dechasa Torah Mamanam Shal Yisrael, that Hashem doesn't want us wasting money on high quality food for animals. Animals can eat lesser quality food. Right? There's a difference between Roy Lachilas Adam and Roy Lachilas Kalev. They're different criteria. Rabbi Yaakov Emden says that it's based on Malim B'Kodesh Vein Moridin. Chiddush, because what does that have to do with Kedusha? Right? That's something that you say by Tashmishe Kedusha. It's not even Pashut, you'd say something like that by Tashmishe Mitzvah. But to say Malim B'Kodesh Vein Moridin by Tashmishe nothing. That's not even tashmisha mitzvah. That's a very big chiddush. So it happens to be Magen Avraham and Kofayin Aleph paskins this, but it's not mentioned in the Rambam Rif or the Shulchan Aruch. So this is among the Shichachas HaOmer, Omer with an Aleph, right? You know that there's a kuntras called Shichachas HaOmer with an Aleph written about 120 years ago, where the guy collected all the halachas that are mefurish or gemaras, but for whatever reason are not quoted in Rambam or Shulchan Aruch. So it's a cute play on words, Shichachas HaOmer. So that this is among those. Among the Rambam quotes, but it's not in Rambam or Shulchan Aruch. Ellie?
Two questions?
Yeah.
One, if you can't always give someone stucca, you shouldn't give them stucca at all.
So, yeah, so it's interesting. No, you should give tzedakah, but not in a way where you give the impression that he's... Apparently not in a way where you give the impression that he can rely on you consistently. It's an excellent point. Like, why would you be so wasteful? I mean, I guess you have to go back to that Gemara in Bava Basra, that HaKadosh Baruch Hu could also be machu baniyim. He's just trying to give us a zuchus, and therefore, whatever we don't provide for them, HaKadosh Baruch Hu is going to provide for them with whatever it is that they're supposed to have. I guess you have to rely on that bitachon. But
didn't Rashi bring up the Yad Vendin, that whatever that Gemara is talking about, why you shouldn't use human food for animals? So wouldn't you still be violating those principles if you take human food and throw it in the river? If that's doesn't violate Ma'amad or Kodesh, that doesn't violate wasting human food.
Yeah.
I don't see why it's better to throw it to the river than to give it to animals.
I think the assumption was that when you threw it in the river, it was in packaging where it would be found by a sailor on a boat or something, or it would wash up ashore somewhere else where someone would use it. I think that's what the Achronim say in that Gemara, if I recall. I think something like that.
That's the first question also. I mean, he really is giving tzedakah.
Not necessarily. It could be rich people that are finding it. So it's not really tzedakah. It's a good meaning, right? Meaning, what qualifies as people food, right? Is it anything that's edible that people typically eat? Maybe it's that. Maybe animal food should dafka be the things that people typically don't eat. But that's very hard because most. Yeah, that's what the Gemara says. Look, the Rif and the Rambam don't paskin it, and the Shulchan Aruch doesn't paskin it, but Magen Avraham paskins it. You know, a lot of the Achronim say we don't paskin this way, but it's interesting. There is a passage in the Pardes Yosef where he suggests that leftovers are different. That whenever a person is eaten and he has leftovers, it becomes defined as animal food. He quotes an Imre Emes that way. The pasuk says the chol v'hemtecha. Even though halachically it shouldn't be l'chol v'hemtecha, it should be l'hemtecha l'cha, because you have to feed your animals before you eat. But that's just dafka to indicate that whatever is you're not going to finish can go to l'vehemtecha. In fact, the pasuk in Parshas Mishpatim says v'ashviz tishmetene v'nitashta v'achle v'yoni amcha, and then v'yisram tochel chayis asada, that after people eat, the food can be given to the animals. So there are a number of poskim that seem to assume that that's the case, and furthermore, and this is I guess most relevant, Ksav Sofer writes in a tshuva that when you own the animals and it's your responsibility to make sure that the animals are strong and healthy, so then it's not considered a hefsid mamon, it's not considered to be boyd b'tavas shel Kadosh Baruch Hu, because adrav, a part of tavas shel Kadosh Baruch Hu are the animals that you own. You own a flock of sheep. You want to keep those sheep healthy, so it's not boit b'tavas shel Kadosh Baruch Hu when you use food that you could have eaten to strengthen the sheep, which you also might one day eat or whatever, or are a symbol of your wealth, or are a symbol of your are very expensive. Probably the same with dogs. You know, dogs are not cheap. I found out, someone in my shul told me he was buying a dog, and he said, you know, I'm not sure if it's the right thing or not. All right, worst comes to worst, it was $5,000. You know, big deal. I'm like, what? $5,000 for a dog? But apparently, I guess they're expensive. So Okay. But so Ksav Sofer writes that if it's yours, then it could be this whole halacha, that this halacha doesn't apply. He says Rav Huna must have not owned any animals. That's what Ksav Sofer says. If Rav Huna owned animals and he went to throw it into the river, he just would have fed it to his own animals. Minchas Yitzchak goes a step further. He says, even if you don't own animals, you don't own animals, but others do, and you can give it to people who own animals, that's fine too. As long as it's being fed to animals by people who own animals. And that's also not Boit B'Davaso Shel HaKadosh Baruch Hu, which makes Rav Huna very difficult to understand. I mean, because the Gemara said that Rav Huna threw it in the river. It did not say that Rav Huna, you know... That Rav Huna tried to find a pet owner. I don't know. So anyway, okay, that's a little bit off topic, but I thought an interesting discussion, yeah. Nonetheless. Yeah.
Just on that last point about if you own an animal, then you can feed someone else's animal. For example, like, Rebbe has a fish. Now it's not
if I own an animal that I can feed someone else's animal. If someone else owns an animal, I can give it to him and let him feed his animals with it. Yeah. Now, Tehila David in Siman Shin Ches over here, El Slamin Hay, says, I understand. He says, even if there are dogs in your city, or there are pet owners in your city, why should the food remnants not be muktzah for you? You're not a dog owner. You're not a pet owner. We said that when a rich person sets aside an item to not be used on Shabbos, because it's beneath him, right? The ripped cloth that was Sholosh Etzbos by Sholosh Etzbos, but it's less than Sholosh Al Sholosh Tfachim, so it's beneath him. So it's muktzah even for a poor person who comes to visit the rich person's house, because we always follow the Balabas. So when you're determining whether something is muktzah and it's really person-dependent, we always say, okay, go with the Balabas. Whoever the Balabas is in that house, he determines whether something is muktzah or not. So if that's the case, then why would food remnants not be muktzah for non-pet owners? He doesn't have any use for it if we're following the balabas. So it's not muktzah. It should be muktzah for him. So Tehila David suggests that the tzarek lechalek, he says, tidavka b'muktzah la'ashirim machma sheinu chashuv lahem v'adavar garua be'enehem, that if something is like beneath the dignity of the Ashir, that's where we say that we follow the Balabas. Over here it's different. It's not that it's beneath him. It's not that it's the owner understands and recognizes that this stuff is valuable. It's just not valuable to me because I don't have use for it. It's like someone has an allergy, right? You're allergic to dairy and you have, pints and pints of Häagen-Dazs ice cream. It's not that you think Häagen-Dazs ice cream is stupid or that Häagen-Dazs ice cream is a waste. No, you understand it. It will just destroy your stomach. So you're not, or destroy, you know, or kill you. So you're not gonna eat it. But it's not that it has zero value. So it's not muktzah if there are others that can use it. So ripped fabric less than 3 tefachim by 3 tefachim, that person who's rich sees it as something, doesn't even think of it as something useful. So therefore it becomes muktzah for everybody who comes to his house. But food remnants, he does understand that it is useful to people who have dogs. So when determining whether something is muktzah, you follow the perception of the balabas of the item's value, which is a tricky thing, because if you were to ask him to think about it for a second, right, he could probably perceive that a small cloth might be valuable to an ani also. But the I guess default perception of the balabas to its value, or to its value even for someone else. So remnants of food or shells that are edible for animals, the perception is that it's not a waste. This is a metzias issue, right? Nowadays, probably the perception for a lot of these things is that it is a waste. A lot of people have no idea that you can, that these things are still useful to people. Like, you know, you have empty cartons or something, or empty Pringles cans or something like that. So you're like, okay, that's garbage, right? And in my perception, I what would I do with an empty Pringles can? But then a preschool teacher comes to your house and like, oh, that is gold. We could do so many different projects with that. That's like, now that you tell it to me, I could think back to all the, you know, projects that my kids brought home or whatever. So I get it. But like, naturally, I wouldn't have thought about this. Just one practical application of this before we take questions is the post can point out is about medicine. The Minchas Shabbos is quoted by the Shmir Shabbos Kilchasa that medicine is muktzah for a healthy person on Shabbos, because he's not allowed to use it. You're not allowed to take medicine if you're perfectly healthy. Shmir Shabbos says, though, that in an area that other sick people might be able to use that medicine, the medicine is not going to be muktzah. Presumably, that's based on this concept that about food remnants, that if there are animals in the area that could eat them, then they're not muktzah, even if you don't own a pet yourself. So medicine that's suitable for others is not going to be muktzah, because you recognize the intrinsic value of that medicine, and the fact that it's suitable for others is enough. So even leftover antibiotics that you don't need aren't muktzah, because they're intrinsically valuable, and could, and everybody always needs, there are always people that need antibiotics, so it's a commonly enough needed medicine. But medicine that's like very rare, let's say sometimes Rachman Al-San, person dies and they were on like some, you know, serious regiment of medication, of very rare and expensive medications, and now the person's dead, the person's not here anymore, and you have this medicine cabinet full of medicines, so most of those probably nobody needs, at least in your area, nobody needs, and in those cases, if it's a kind of medication that's only used in the most dire of circumstances, it's unlikely that anyone in your area needs that medicine, so that's like a city without a dog, and therefore it would not... Therefore, it would be muktzah. It's interesting. Shmir Shabbos writes that medicine in a gemach is not muktzah, because the whole purpose is that if there is that rare person that needs it, they know to go there. So it becomes the whole concept is that it's supposed to be available always for whoever comes, which may seem like a foreign concept to you, the concept of medicine in a gemach. But apparently in Israel, this is done. I remember my sister after one of her or several of her babies, she was given painkillers, and she gave like these painkillers to a medicine gemach. Like that's got to be a felony, right? Meaning that can't be okay. That is extremely, extremely dangerous, right? You have to be careful. There's a reason why prescription medications are prescription medications. You need a prescription for them. Now, granted, everyone's mother has enough of a medical license to tell you exactly what will help and to prescribe you the medicines. But that seems like a dangerous game to play. But the Shmir Shabbos talks about that.
We have a friend who got fertility meds from Gemach.
Yeah, that's right.
Metrolids.
Okay. By the way, in fertility medicine, triplets are considered a failure, because the goal is not to have multiples. The goal is to have. Obviously, it doesn't. If everyone's healthy, no one's complaining. I mean, a lot of sleepless nights, I guess. But
yeah. Didn't we mention earlier this week or last week that medicine can be moved only because we're scared someone's going to get hurt from it, which implies that it is muksa. Otherwise.
Right, so revisiting that, it's not so pashut, right? That's what I'm saying. It really depends on, exactly, it really depends on what type of medicine it is. So if it's a rare medicine, then it would be muksa. Shmir Shabbos says, if it's not a rare medicine, then it wouldn't be muksa to begin with.
What do they do with it? If it's all based on how much value you would attribute to this, why should it matter how rare the medicine is? Or why should it matter if there's someone in your city? Whether it's a dog owner in my city or not, and the whole point is that you're not practically going to give it to someone in your city. As long as there are dog owners in the world, if there's someone who needs this medicine, then that's valuable. I just understand where the cutoff point comes from in your city.
Right. If it's about recognizing its value, you recognize its value. And if it's not about... if it's about feeding the dogs, I'm not feeding the dogs in my city anyway.
So I just don't understand how it's store health.
Yeah.
It has to be that you could practically give it to someone in your city.
But you wouldn't.
That's what you say.
But
he said
that's a gives a chashiv.
That's his whole point. He says that you never give this woman in your city, so you have to come to something else. That's what he's coming to answer. So I just don't understand this middle ground of it has to be in your city. So what Tyler was saying before, the last time when we were discussing medicine, he said if a person in the house needs the medicine.
Right.
Which makes sense, because you could distribute it. Like, the rare medicine, too. Like, everyone agrees rare medicine is valuable.
Yeah.
Could be it's only valuable based on what people in your city generally use.
Is that true? We're saying you're not practically ever going to give it to someone in the city, so especially nowadays.
No, but I mean, maybe they were already saying that the your perception is shaped by your access to people who have benefit from it, who could benefit from it, even if you're not going to actually give to them.
Even though you know that people, I mean, nowadays we know that people are going to benefit from it outside your city. You're going to say your perception is that since no one in your city benefits from it, no one should be valued to it.
Here, painkillers are hard to come by unless they have a prescription, but in Israel, apparently, it's much easier.
Right.
So, here you'll attribute much more chashivas to it.
We're saying that the fact that you could get them without prescription.
I hear, it's a tough one. I'm not sure. Yeah.
So is there a difference that by dog or food that I might give to a dog, I know my neighbor has a dog to use the whatever, but by the time that a Shabbos comes in, if I'm not aware of someone in my immediate vicinity who needs painkillers or who needs antibiotics, isn't that because of Dash? And if I find out tomorrow, there's someone who ran out of their penicillin, these penicillin, I happen to have some in my closet. But when Shabbos came in, I had no knowledge. That he was
no, we're saying these are common enough medicines that you're not Matsudaito, man. I think. I'm going to have to stop here because I've got to run to Tina to be Menachem Avil. Tomorrow, raw meat, raw fish, and fighting. You know, we'll just go, and we'll start grafting away also. Okay, that's the plan.